All right, everyone, welcome into episode 5 of Cue the Memories, presented by Coors Banquet, live from the Kowloon Restaurant in Saugus, Massachusetts. I am your host, Eric Russo, so happy to be joined by a trio of Stanley Cup champions here. We have former Bruins defenseman and historic 100 member, 2011 Stanley Cup champion, Andrew Ferentz. We have the all-time winningest coach in Bruins history, former Jack Adams winner, Claude Julien. And we have someone who spent 19 seasons in the black and gold, six-time Selke Trophy winner, former captain of the Bruins, 2011 Stanley Cup champion, Patrice Bergeron. All right, the crowd's rowdy, ready to go. Bergie, I think we'll start with you. How's it being an Uber driver these days? Five stars from the kids? Or?
I mean, so far the reviews are pretty good. But no, it's been a lot of fun. It's been fun to be home. I've said that before. You know, I want to really take that step back and spend the time at home and catching up with some of the things that I've missed. And some of them, obviously, is the drop-offs and the pickups and being there for their activities and whatnot. So spending a lot of time in the car, but again, it's been awesome to see them and kind of actually getting even closer to them, which is pretty special.
Did you get any advice from this guy about retired life? Has he been texting you? What's going on?
Yeah, well, we did have some conversations before retiring. I did talk to a lot of guys that I trust and that I've played with, and he was one of them, and yeah, so it was great to get some advice from him and all the other guys as well.
So fair, we did this podcast a couple of years ago, but it was virtual, so it's nice to have you side by side in person here.
This is a little uncomfortable. Does my mic work? Yeah, it works.
Yes, they can hear you.
On Zoom, I don't know, like I just talk and it just works. This is weird in person.
I know. I forgot what you looked like.
I know. This is good. This is good, though. I really enjoyed that. I was going crazy in COVID, and so that was actually really nice to like touch base, and we got together and had some drinks and rewatched the game, and that was fun. Like that was pretty cool. Actually, we made the most of it.
Does everyone remember that?
Yeah. It's nice that they put Bergie's jersey on sale. There's like it must have been a fire sale when you're retired because. We lined up for pictures before doing this podcast, and every single person had a Bergeron jersey. So,
I saw some Ferentz jerseys out there.
Sale. I didn't see one Ferentz.
There's a couple.
There's actually. I have somebody that was in my flash mob during my cup day in the North End, and she's wearing the shirt from that. So there's one Ferentz fan out there. That's good.
So this is going to have a very 2011 focus, but I think it's important to start a little bit before that. And I think that 2007-08 season, Claude, it was your first year as coach. Fair, that was your first full season with the Bruins. How did that season sort of shape things? Because that was the first playoff team in a while, that great playoff series against Montreal. Everyone remembers Marco Sturm's goal in Game 6. How did that set the tone for things moving forward? Claude, maybe you can take that.
Well, we're going quite a ways back when you're talking about that many years ago, but it was great. You know what we had? We had a good group of players that were keen to do the right thing. So basically, I was able to convince them to play a certain way and a way that was going to give us, I guess, consistency in every game. And, you know, to this day, you look back at our lineup, and it wasn't the flashiest lineup. But as a group, we really played hard. And, you know, we talk about that game 6 against Montreal in the first round, and I still remember that as if it was yesterday. It was probably one of the most exciting games, I mean, that we had played in such a long time. And I think the fans really embraced that game. And then, obviously, we went to Montreal and lost game 7. But it kind of set the stage for the years to come. At the same time, I still remember the first game of that season, and I looked around and half the building was empty. And I remember telling my assistant coach at the time, Jeff Ward, I said, we've got a lot of work to do. And so we kind of, in a way, as much as it was disappointing, it was also inspiring for us to really bring back the type of hockey that I think Bruin fans wanted. And as I mentioned before, I think we had the nucleus of players who were willing to do those kind of things. And, you know, with some success comes a little bit of luck. And we were lucky enough, like I said, to have those players. And we were fortunate enough to have players that really embraced what we were trying to get them to do.
Fair. Is that how you remember it, too, that was sort of a stepping stone to bigger and better things?
Yeah, that last part especially. I think, like, when I first got... I came from Calgary. So you're playing NHL up in Canada, and then you come to an Original Six team. But just walking around Boston, like, yeah, you go through Faneuil Hall, and there's Patriots and Red Sox and Celtics, and, like, no Bruins. Like, you wouldn't see jerseys, no hats, like, nothing. Like, people just didn't represent the Bruins. And there was empty seats in the crowd. And it was pretty simple. Like, we had, like, legitimate meetings to be like, all right, like, what are we trying to accomplish here? Like, obviously we want to make the playoffs, but even before that, I tell this all the time, is like, our number one goal was like, can we just make people proud again? Like, even if we lose, like, we knew there was a certain style that people wanted to see. And so, like, all right, maybe we're going to lose to the Canadians, but, like, we're going to beat the shit out of them. And, like, but seriously, it's that simple. Like, can, like, people just throw on the hat and be happy about it? And so, like, it was that kind of attitude. And, like, I think just literally, like, sitting in a room and being like, this is who we are. This is what we want to accomplish. And, like, the playoffs will be a byproduct. And so I think, like, that was our goal. And obviously to make the playoffs was, like, unbelievable. Like that clinching game and to do it and then get into the series, it's great. But, like, but I think the biggest thing was just seeing the building full and, like, seeing a hat on the sidewalk and being like, oh, God, thank God, it's not the Patriots. Like, finally somebody's they dusted off the Bruins stuff. And they're like, and then, you know, we had to, like, listen to it all the time. Like, I was a fan when Bobby Orr was playing here, and we hope he can be a fan again. Thank you. Yeah, it was that. It was great.
Mission accomplished, I think.
Yeah, we're headlining the Kowloon now.
Bergie, I know that you missed most of that season, but you had been here for several years before that. What was changing at that time where things were moving in the right direction? What did you see?
Yeah, I think the sense of pride, I guess, in with the guys within the locker room, wanted to make some changes, wanted to kind of, like, you know, I think Fair kind of alluded to it, you know, having the fans excited, wanting to be back in the building. And you're right, you know, I missed most of that year, but it was exciting. A lot of guys that came together and really pushed and worked extremely hard to make the playoffs and eventually really bring that series to seven. And it was special to be a part of it, and exciting also for the future, right? Looking forward. And, you know, I think that year was the emergence of Kretch, right? That was, like, Kretch's first year where he really, like, came in and stuck around and really, like, was a big part of that team. And so it was exciting for me to see, you know, younger guys coming in and making an impact, and all the guys that were coming, you know, Sean and Fair and the guys that, you know, that joined the group were guys that cared, were guys that had character, were guys that wanted to make a difference. So, a lot of things made that very exciting for the future.
Claude, when you came in, how much were you looking forward to working with Patrice, and what did you sort of know of his game before you got to Boston?
Well, 2 years earlier, I was coaching the Montreal Canadiens, my first coaching job, and I always remembered Bergie coming to Montreal, being a kid from Quebec and growing up a Quebec Nordiques fan, and somehow it came out that Bergie just hated the Canadiens. So
true.
And you know what? I was okay with that because I played with the Quebec Nordiques, so part of me was on his side. But when I came here, it was great because, you know, like, honestly, you saw a young player being such an impact player at a young age. At 18 years old, you could tell that the future was going to be bright for him. And I was excited to to have him on my team. And not only that, but, you know, we talked about, you know, we had some good people around. And whether it's the two that are sitting here, we had, you know, Zdeno as our captain. And we had some good people around. And I was looking forward to working with him. But if you guys remember my first year, Bergie on game 10 ended up with that serious head injury, the concussion, and ended up missing the rest of the year. And I did miss him in the first year, but he was able to make up for it in the following years. So it was great to have him on my side. And you know what? Not only that, but he's one of many that really believed in what we were trying to do. And those are the kind of players that help make a coach successful, is when you leave the room and they continue to endorse what you're trying to get them to do.
The crazy thing about Bergie, and I was thinking about this today as I was really preparing for my podcast.
I love the notebook that you brought. It's
I got
great.
A notebook. I knew I bought this for a reason. I've got a grocery list on the first page and my podcast. Yeah. Anyways, the crazy thing about Bergie is that at a young age, he was like thrust into leadership. Like, I remember my first few years, like I was so clueless and I didn't want to touch the puck. I just didn't want to get in the way. I just kind of want to blend in. And so I think like that, like to me, like when you know somebody and you play with them, you just do it. But when I reflect back, like Bergie was always so young and we never really realized it until you actually stop and thought about it. And you're like, dude, like he's like, yeah, it's my birthday. I'm 20. I'm like, what? Like, what? Like you already played 500 games. Like, but like, that's the crazy thing to me is that like most of us take a while to figure it out. And like, you're just kind of thrust into like a leadership position. Like, and the thing that I think a lot of people don't get is just because you're a good hockey player, like, doesn't mean you're a good leader or that you're smart or anything. Like, just you have a good slap shot. Like, you'd be dumb as rocks. But, and so, like, the two don't always go hand in hand. But, like, he was a really special player. And I'm not, you know, you're my friend. But, like, really, it's a tough thing to do as a young person to be relied upon in games. But then also, like, you were a really strong voice within like, the meetings, the small group meetings with the coaching staff. And then also, like, when it's time to speak in front of, like, the room. Like, did somebody teach you that? Is it just like, how does that work? Because it takes everybody else a long time to figure it out.
Yeah, I think like over time, I got used to it even more. I think, you know, I've learned a lot from veterans and older players. But to be honest, I think this locker room was making myself anyways very comfortable talking and being able to be around and obviously leading by example was my first thing. But like, to voice my opinion with you or within the leadership group and being able to say what I thought, you know my two cents, I guess. So in a way, like I can't say that someone really taught me, but I felt like I was trying to be a sponge even from the beginning, from my first year on. And Martin Lapointe was a big influence on me, and then you guys came in, the Big Z and you and Thority, and so it really made my job easy to be a small part of the leadership group and learn. And then as we went on over time, obviously, found my voice even more. That was, you know, as you're growing, as you're gaining experience, you feel more comfortable talking and stepping up and feel like you do have something to say.
How did Claude help your game, Bergie? I know the defensive-minded structure was always part of it, but how did he help you take that to a level where you win 6 Selke trophies?
Yeah, no, I think he was a big influence on me and how I was able to improve my defensive game. I mean, you know, I think Claude from the get-go, he was very meticulous, very, you know, detailed-oriented in everything that within the system, and I think that really helped me into learning that, you know, it's a game of inches and you can't, you know, take it for granted. Or, you know, in the previous years we were, you know, defensively we were lacking, we were lackadaisical, and I think at times it hurt us. And then that's what he brought in right away, was the, you know, that culture of like, you can't accept like half-assed jobs, like you need to go at it and finish it all the way, even if you're up by 4 goals or 3 goals, you know, you finish till the buzzer. And all the details that he talked about really influenced my game and myself, and I've learned a lot from him. And I think I've said that many times, and Claude was, you know, one of the biggest influence, you know, especially early in my career, for me to
to develop into the player that I wanted to be.
We got this figured out. I just give you a look, and you give me a nod.
Now
and,
we know,
hey,
yeah.
This is actually easier.
It's a little
than
easier
Zoom.
Than it was on Zoom.
I got the
a
next
couple
one.
Years ago. Go for it.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting, like, because I tell all these stories, like, people, like, I don't live by any of my old teammates. Like, I'm on Vancouver Island on the other side, and so I tell all these stories, and I, like, have my own, like, version of what happened and, like, all these things. And I wonder if it's actually accurate. So I'm, like, excited to find out what other people think from my same team. But, like, Claude, I was curious because, like, we did, like, we actually sat down and had, like, real meetings and talked about, all right, like, what kind of culture we want to build. Like, in your opinion, what kind of, like, what were we trying to build? Because I have my own opinion. I wrote it down and everything. So I, but I'm curious, like, so, like, we sat down before the year and we're like, all right, like, what kind of team do you want to be? And I attribute this quote to you, and maybe it's not you, but take it because it's a good one. But like I said, like when you think about like what kind of culture you are, or like what you're, you know, who you are, like it's not what you think you are, it's what your opponents think you are. Like that's who you actually are. It's deep, right? Like that's who you actually, that's what your identity actually is what the Montreal Canadiens think you are. So anyways, that's like what were we trying to become, I guess, in your opinion, like the culture of our team?
Well, you're right, and I was going to ask you to tell me what you thought I brought first.
I got it.
You're obviously...
I won't even cheat. I'll let you read it as I...
But no, the first thing that I wanted is, first of all, coming to Boston, you know what kind of team's been successful. You know what the fans are looking for. And the first thing that I wanted to do is build a team that was hard to play against. And if we were going to be hard to play against, I think the fans would enjoy seeing our team. And you mentioned that earlier. Sometimes it didn't matter if we lost, to Montreal, but we beat the crap out of them, right? So fans are leaving and say, ah, we lost. But, oh, boys, it was great to see them beat the crap out of so-and-so. And but we wanted to be a hard team to play against, not just as far as fighting was concerned, although that was a part of it. I think that other teams didn't like about us. It didn't matter what kind of game they played against us. We were always hard to play against. And Berge mentioned it as well. It's okay to score goals, but you're not going to win games if you give up more than you score. So basically we wanted to kind of balance that out quite a bit. And I wanted to make sure that we understood that there was two ways to a game, the offensive part in the defensive part. And I was a little detailed, and to the point where I can be honest about it today, at times I would go back home and say, am I too strict on the little details? Am I driving them crazy with the little details? But, you know, again, when you have the right type of players, the right group, and they kind of bought into it, those little details is what made the difference in our game, especially in the first year. And from there, as we... you know, built with the draft picks and the trades and everything else, and slowly kind of modified our lineup, we got better. But those little details are what made the difference for us for many years. And I can even say to this day today, I was just mentioning to Berge, I said, you know, it's pretty impressive that the Boston Bruins today lose their top two centermen, and you take the top two centermen of any NHL team in the league and see if they're battling for first place. And that credit goes to, obviously, the players buying into the way the Bruins have been playing for many, many years and the character of it. And that's why they are what they are today. And I think the culture seems to have stayed, which is great to see. I love watching the Bruins games, and I love seeing having success. But at the same time, to go back to what you were saying, I think... The identity that we wanted was to be a hard team to play against. And as Andrew mentioned, I wanted other teams to say that. Cripes, I hate playing against the Bruins. I hate playing against them. They're always on top of you. They don't give you any space. They don't let you get on the inside, everything else. And then everybody looks good. And what we did in our first year, we frustrated a lot of teams, and we were able to win hockey games. Low-scoring games, because I don't think we had the depth up front as far as scoring. You got to remember, Berge was out for the year. David Krejci was in his first year. And as you mentioned, Berge, he became a real important player near the end of the season. But at one point in the first half of the season, we sent him back down to Providence for a few games. And to show the character of the players that we had, most players would have said, I can't believe they're sending me down. And the first thing that came out of David Krejci's mouth was, I'm not playing well, I need to play better. He went down there, the right attitude came back, and that same year he was a dominant player at the end of the year. So that's where I stand here as a coach and say, maybe you have a part in the success of it, but at the same time, you're lucky to have the kind of players you had. And that's where I felt lucky as a coach.
I agree. You're very lucky to have us. That was good. Especially Berge. Okay, that was pretty good. I think we had some crossover. Was that you that said that? Brilliant thing?
Perfect. I'm taking credit. You told me to.
Okay, good. I'm just glad I'm telling truths. Berge, so you like, well, Claude said like it's still there, right? Like the culture still lives on. I'll attribute that to you. I mean, you were here the whole time. And kept it going with incredible consistency. Like it was actually, like I don't know the stats. I'm not a stats guy, but like there's got to be very few teams that have like had as many wins as the Bruins over the last decade or more. You were leading the ship, at, you know, for the vast majority of that, and then it's continued on. You know, with Marshy obviously learning from you. So like what was your keys? Like what do you think? What was the difference? I mean, you haven't seen. I've been on some bad teams. So I've seen the difference between cultures and stuff.
Yeah.
But like for you, like what did you concentrate on? Like what do you think was the difference maker between, you know, ours and other people's?
Yeah, no, I think, first of all, I wasn't necessarily leading the ship. I think it was a part of it.
Just take it, man. This is, yeah. It's 100 years. You're going to the Hall of Fame. We get it. No. The jersey's getting retired. No, this is the thing. He calls me up. Like you said, we have conversations like, thinking about retirement, this and that. And I'm like, dude, like, your jersey's going to go to the rafters. You're a Hall of Famer. Like, this is incredible. Like, enjoy. He's like, oh, I don't know that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you just oh, you're good. You're really good.
I got lucky. So, to me, like, honestly, like, and I think, like, credit where credit is due, I think, it started with Claude, you know, like the culture and the way that he wanted us to play. And he's right that players came in and bought in and really kind of, wanted to make a difference, wanted to make an impact, wanted to bring the fans back in the building. And I think it kind of snowballed because everyone was really, you know, wanting to be a part of it. They wanted to be a Boston Bruin. And I think, you know, you're part of that mix. And then obviously Z. And so there's a lot of guys that made it, you know, easy, I guess, to steer the ship because, you know, when you're alone, you know, it's hard to bring the rest of the guys with you. But when you have, like, more than half the team that's really buying in and wants to be a difference and wants to be a part of it, then whoever's left has to follow, right? And even if you bring in a few guys, whether it's at the trade deadline or during the summer, they have no other choice but to just – you know, stay on board, I guess, not jump ship, and, you know, like, really buy in, as I said many times, you know, and I think, like, we've seen it over the course of the last decade or so that, you know, that's just how it goes, you know, if you want to be a Boston Bruin, there's a standard, there's a way of doing things where it's on and off the ice, and, but yeah, it's been, I can't take credit for that, because I think it's been going on for too long and people have really, you know, bought into that and for me to you know, as I said, Z, so many guys that really came in and changed the way things were needed to be done in order to be successful. And it's great to see that. It's great to see that the guys now, you know, there's a lot of guys that have been with obviously over the last few years that are still on the team and to see them being so successful still and playing the same type of way and using everyone within the lineup to have success and not leaving anyone behind. You know, whether you're playing, you're in and out of the lineup, you're playing 2 minutes, or you're playing big time minutes. You're a part of it. They need to buy in, and you need to do the work off the ice, whether it's a workout or same thing on the ice. So to see that things are not changing is pretty special to me, and I'm sure it feels great to you as well. You know, to be a part of something that carries on is pretty cool.
And I will say this, and it's not just because they got us free tickets to the game tomorrow, but it does start from the top. Like, really, for real, like from the Jacobs family all the way down, like everybody has bought in. It's not just the players and the coaches. Like, it really is an organizational thing, and I think that support from the top is key. Would you like to know my answers, Claude?
No, I was going to say, why did they ask me for my credit card for tomorrow?
Oh my God, that's terrible. We'll look into that.
Hopefully it's just for me, not for the team.
Here's my answers. Here's what I wrote down. Our keys to success and the things that I thought were really important for the Bruins, no one on the team thought they were too cool, which sounds like a little thing, but it's really not. Everybody, like, was first in line for the drill, was working as hard as they could in practice. Like, we were a bunch of tryhards, for real, and, like, proud of it. Like, and it's... That's a toxic thing in culture, is to, like, oh, what are you working so hard? Are you trying to suck up to the coach or something? But we had a team full of guys that were, like, trying hard and just not too cool for anything. That was one. Everyone could speak up in the room. So whether that was Krejci in his first year or Marchand or he spoke up a lot. But, but, like, they were allowed to. But it came with the duty of also having the same expectations as the veterans. So, great, you're a rookie. Yep, take the floor. Tell us what you think. But you have the same expectations as the guy that's been here for 12 years to show up and be a professional. And so that was key. And then I think there was a real pride, not just as being a Bruin, but a pride in your individual role. And so, like, Sean Thornton on the fourth line, he's like, I am the best fourth liner in this whole damn league. And, like, he's like, these 2 minutes of ice are going to be the greatest 2 minutes in the NHL tonight, and I am vital to this. And it was like, but he believed it, and you believed it, and you told him it. He's like, you are the most important fourth line, and we need you. But it wasn't like you just, like, feeding a guy, like, some BS. It was true. Like, we actually believed it. And I think that was a huge key, is that individual pride. And, like, yeah, you're always trying to, like, do more and, like, try to, I want more power play time, or I want more ice time, and I want to do better. But there was such a pride in, like, those individual roles. And I think to your point of, like, concentrating on the details, we all knew what our details were in those roles. And that's what I think gave us a lot of pride, is that we had a mission and we were, like, we knew exactly what we were supposed to do. And we, like, just wrapped our arms around it and yeah, it felt good about it. Felt valued.
Well, Thorny thought he was the most important fourth liner because he also took the optionals, right? After 2 minutes of ice time, the next day it was optional. He wasn't going on the ice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was that important. And he was tired. So, no, remember...
Look, a guy needs a sauna and a massage. Like,
exactly. So,
he's gotta get ready.
But it's a good point, Andrew, because still to this day, I have never... seen a team. We used to have this drill, what we called 3-on-3 down low. And 3-on-3 down low meant below the top set of circles, three offensive guys against three defenders. And I've been with a lot of other teams, or I should say Montreal twice, New Jersey, and never have I seen guys compete as hard in those drills against each other as I seen with this group, as you mentioned. They were so proud and detailed, and I remember even, I'm going to say, Bergie, if we had a one-on-one drill, Bergie would go against Zdeno. And it was because they wanted to be two of the best on the ice that day, and they were willing to go at each other. And I remember that like it was yesterday. That's where, as you mentioned, the pride in that dressing room, it also showed up in practice. Our practices were hard, and not hard because I pushed them to be hard because they wanted to compete hard and they wanted to be that way. And what it did is in games, it became second nature. And in a lot of games, we were winning battles, which allowed us to win hockey games. And that was all part of that group. And like I said, I might have been detailed, but I keep repeating myself. The players also had a big part in it by competing as hard as they did and practicing as hard as they did.
I think we cared for each other, too. I think that's the other thing I think I would, you know, add to that is just, like, yes, like, individually you wanted to make yourself accountable, but I think it was making yourself accountable also to the guy next to you. You know, I don't want to let him down. So I think, like, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of caring, a lot of proud and pride in wanting to be at your best because you're like, you know, if I'm not, like, I'm letting Claude or Fair down and the rest of the guys and so on. So, and to that drill, going with Z, so Z would come to me sometimes and be like, hey, let's set the tone. And I'd be like, so we'd go one-on-one in the corner, and sure enough, how do you think it ended up? Like, my helmet's up to here, I'm on the ice, I'm like, and then we come back to the line, he's like, great job. I'm like, great job? What do you mean, great job? Like, you abused me for 15 seconds, and, you know? But I guess we set the tone with that.
The other part, too, Andrew, that you mentioned everybody was important, is that the players, you know, had decided that there was no such thing as a rookie. He wasn't a rookie, he was a first-year player. For some reason, the players did not like the word rookie. They wanted to use first-year player, but at the same time, they also made sure that that first-year player knew he had some dues to pay. In other words, you know, hey, help the trainers throw the bags on the cart so that we can bring it to the truck and bring it to the plane. Like, they would help out. They would do those kind of things, but without being prompted by the veterans, it was up to them to show that they wanted to be part of this group and blend in. So that was one of the things that happened with the players. But the other part, too, is, and for me, it was important for everybody to feel like they were important to the team. And there was times after games I'd come in the room and I'd say, hey, fourth line, awesome tonight. You guys really set the tone, or you guys turned the game around by that shift where you threw a bunch of hits and we got the momentum going again. It was important not to always go after the top player and say, hey, thanks for winning the game for us. You got the winning goal. Everybody had a role to play, and sometimes it was the penalty killers, and I would make sure to mention them so that it's not always the goal scorers. It's also the defensive guys. So we tried to make sure as a coaching staff that we put emphasis on everybody at one point so that they would feel that they were part of the team. And then, as Andrew mentioned as well, then the players took it upon themselves to make sure that continued amongst themselves also.
I want to fast forward to the 2010-11 season, if you guys remember that year. You guys had a couple of tough games, 7 losses before that, and then you have the trip to Vermont, the team building, the trip to Prague. How did those trips help you guys build? And are there any good stories from those trips?
I can't think of a single one. Prague?
Anybody?
Yeah. No, we...
No, it was fun. Why are you guys so hesitant? Go ahead.
I don't know. I don't have any stories.
I can't wait for the G
version. I was in bed by 9, so... I don't know.
Fair, looks like you're going to be the one telling the stories for this
one. I mean, Vermont was fun. Vermont was, like, a couple years. Like, we did... High five, right? Right. See, I don't remember. I picked up on it. We did these team building trips, and we'd all kind of make fun of it, but it was actually awesome. Like, it was really like we went to like summer camp, and we like climbed walls and did ropes and slept in cabins, and like it was fun. It was really fun. I think we did karaoke one night, like all kinds of stuff. Like, and it was just kind of like one of those. It was just get away from it all. We had fun. You kind of get to know each other. You come up with some funny stories, like, and when you're with each other all year, like, it's a lot of games, and you need stories. Like, you need funny stuff to happen just to carry you through the year. So you end up telling the same stuff over and over, and it's still funny. But that's really what those trips were to me. Like, you get to know each other in a
different setting.
Yeah, you know, different setting. Prague was unbelievable. Yeah. It was like incredible. For some reason, we had like the best schedule in the history of European vacations for hockey teams, because we went to Belfast, Northern Ireland,
played
which was
one game there, right?
Super cool. We played against the Great Britain All Stars.
Yes.
Saw where the Titanic was built. We're doing all the like tours to go see like like Belfast, where all the troubles were. It was really cool. And then Prague, we were there for at least a week. And I was laughing too. I was telling Marie again, I'm like, I gotta ask Claude. You know when you like get older and then you like, there's an age where you hit and you go home and you're having dinner with your parents and you're like, oh shit, like I'm old enough to like actually own up to some of the crap I did. Like, I wonder if they knew. You know, you kind of test them to see like how much they knew when you're in high school. I've done at least, I don't know, maybe you guys have. But like, I did a lot of stuff. But so obviously in Prague, like you were probably well behaved, but we weren't.
Shocker, right? Yeah. As if I didn't know.
But we had this one team photo in front of this like nice bridge. Like, it was so nice. And Prague's beautiful. And there's like these castles and all this stuff. And we're like, team photo. And like somebody brilliant was like, team photo, like 8 a.m. or something stupid. And so like we have this photo of us in front of this bridge. And guys are like, I think they walk straight from the bar. Like... And they're like, just eyes are half open. Guys are leaning on each other. So, like, you had to have known, right?
Yeah, well, first of all,
like practice must have been so bad.
Pick your battles, right, they say? So, well, we did well right over there. But at the same time, you know, you talk about, because in order to answer that, you take a step back and you talk about the team building. And it's more beginning of the year, whether it's the Vermont ones were, just about guys being together and having a little bit of fun. And, you know, you got to justify these trips because the team's paying for it, right? So you got these activities during the game and during the day, sorry, with climbing and all that stuff. And there was some shooting, I think, bow and arrow and all that stuff. We tried to make it differently. And then remember we went to Vermont, too, at the police academy, right, as well. I think the guys enjoyed that. But it was just doing something different and giving the players an opportunity to be together, because during training camp you have sometimes more than one team. There's so many players, so that the main team is not together till the end of camp. So then you say, okay, so how do we get them together and spend a little bit more time together? So that's what we do. And I remember we went to Belfast, and you talk about different things there. Obviously, across the street was the famous bar in Belfast. We knew that, but I remember walking into the hotel, and I looked around and said, wow, I said, this hotel looks pretty good. And somebody told me, yeah, that's because it's been bombed how many times?
Oh, yeah.
And been renovated.
I remember that.
Remember the hotel that's been the most bombed in Belfast and has been renovated so many times. But, you know, we knew, and even as coaches, as our boys can tell, the guys have been out having a good time. But the main thing was, hey, when it comes close to the game, we got to make sure that we're focused. And, you know, when you trust in your group, and we had a good group that we built over the years, you knew that when it came time, and, you know, you guys just solidified that by talking about how you competed in practice and all that stuff. We knew that when the chips were down, our players would be ready. But we, even as coaches, we'd kind of chuckle about it, but we didn't want you guys to know about it either, right? Because it would only encourage you to go out more. So that's what we did. But we were aware. We saw that morning there was a lot of guys that were...
You remember the rookie that missed the bus in Belfast?
Oh, yes. I was just going to say, that's a story. He was a first-year player, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think he even made the team. I think that was his, that you got cut after that.
Oh, okay, I thought you were talking to the other guy that missed, and we can talk about
now. Now we're in code.
No. Remember,
it was blink twice.
It was Tyler Sege missed the bus the first time, and we told him buy a clock, right? We told him to buy a clock. That was it. But the other guy, we'll have to stick with code because I can't remember exactly who it was.
We couldn't find him. So we have a bus full of everybody, and we're driving to the international airport to go from Northern Ireland to check, and this guy's missing.
We finally got a hold of him, right?
Yeah, we got a hold of him, yeah.
And then,
he made it.
He made it.
We'll all have to figure out who it is later,
I guess. His behind him, though.
He made it all the way to Providence, I think.
It'd have to be exactly.
Time is going by quickly here. So we're going to fast forward to the Montreal series, where another trip happened, down 2-0, Claude, I think you were part of, obviously, the decision to go to Lake Placid. How did that help? How did that trip sort of shape things to get away from Montreal and all the noise?
Well, I can tell you that was planned before even the start of the series. And, you know, we're down 2-0, and then we're going to Montreal. And for me, just to get away, because we had 2 days between Game 3 and Game 4. So I just felt like we had to get out of that area and just give ourselves some space and then relax in that. And by winning that first game, it really helped. I mean, we're going to Lake Placid. We're in a good mood. And I remember the next day, we had a day off. So guys were just walking around the village and enjoying themselves and kind of getting away from all the attention that was around our series. And then the following day, we practiced. And then we drove back to Montreal. But, you know, to this day, people really think that the Miracle on Ice had a lot to do with us winning the Stanley Cup. So it's okay. That's nothing wrong with that, right? But I think it was something that was planned ahead of it, of the series, just for that reason, to make sure we were able to stay focused, but also not be, you know, how Montreal is. You can't even walk the streets there where people will bother you. They can be rude. They're fans. They don't have the Patriots. They don't have the Celtics. They don't have the Red Sox. They got the Montreal Canadiens. So obviously that's all they have, and it was better for us to get out of town.
So when you guys came back,
rude. just log that for yeah. future.
So when you came back for Game 4, is that when your glove broke?
Yes. Hey, they were brand new gloves. Brand new gloves.
Right. Did you ever get it fixed?
No, I still have it. That was pretty funny. We had some...
Because they were rude, right?
We had a couple playoff series there, and it was like nuts. Like, I would usually walk to the rink with Z, and so like, great, like, good luck blending in. And like, but like, you'd get like the little Montreal dude poking his head out the door, like, eh, the few, and like, jumping around, and then he'd ask Z for an autograph, like, 2 blocks down the, like, it was like crazy, and they like rock our bus and throw stuff at it, and they like pull the fire alarm in the hotel, and like, remember the semi-trucks? They had, like, honking horns outside the hotel, like, at 3 in the morning.
They would call at 3 in the morning, too.
Like, insane stuff. Yeah. Like, it was just, like, uncle. Like, so that's Game 4. But Game 4, like, I got, like, rocked in the corner by probably, like, the smallest guy. Was it Gianta? He played for them, right?
He was there.
Yeah, I think he, like, He's rocked running. Me in the corner. I was like, oh, my God, I'm so mad. I got hit by a little guy. And there are all their crowds banging on the glass. And then I just, like, scored, and I never score. So, you know. Hey, like, sports needs more raw emotion. And, like, this is... But, like, after
hey,
the
how
game...
How long did it take you to come clean on that, by the way? Was it, like, years?
I got called in. So, like, our GM and our coach are looking at me like I'm an idiot. They're like, what the hell is this? They're like, show me. It's, like, CBC slow motion. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I didn't think anybody saw. They're like, and earlier that year, like a guy in on the island, was it Wojnowski or what's his name? I don't know, whatever. He got suspended, but he did a different hand motion. And they're like, you're going to get suspended. It's playoffs. So you got, like, what are you going to say? I'm like, I don't know. My glove got stuck.
Brand new gloves.
I'm like, don't get suspended. Duh. Yeah, it took a while. Until the next summer, I think. We won, and then I came
and then
clean.
You kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But it's keeping
still
up.
Lust, but you didn't go.
It's like Maverick in Top Gun. You're keeping up relations. With. You guys know the first Top Gun? I haven't seen the last one, yeah. Does he give the finger in the second one? I haven't seen it.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I got, like, probably at least 1,000 back, if that mm-hmm. counts for anything. And then do people know, like, I've told this story before, but, like, I came back home to the North End, and, like, people, like, everybody in the North End, there's no secret, so they know where you live. And I had money taped to my door.
To pay for your fine?
Because I got fined. Yeah, I got fined, $2,500. So that's the other funny thing. I had a call with the league. So you get, like, a call, like, to get suspended or whatever. I'm, like, pleading my kid. I'm like, no, like, you played. Like, you know how sticky gloves are. And he's like, seriously?
that's the excuse.
The guy on the other end, he's like, really? Like, you're going with that story? I'm like, yeah. Your glove is stuck. He's like, you could just hear him exasperated. He's like, well, I gotta fine you. Like, max is 2,500, so I got fined 2,500 bucks. But I think I got like at least 500 bucks, like, on my door.
Worth it.
Whatever.
Yes, you did tell that story before. It's a good one.
I just said we tell stories over and over again. They get better and better.
I want to jump ahead again, down 2-0 in Vancouver. Talk about antics that were going on. Berge, you got bit. There was whining. There was pumping tires. There was all of that stuff. Horty gets hit, of course. There was a lot of stuff to hate across the ice there. How did you guys stay composed, and how did you use that to come back the way you did from that 2-0 deficit?
Yeah, I think we used that a lot. I mean, obviously, there's so much at stake, so it's easy to get up and be ready for a game. But, you know, it was an intense series. There was a lot, you know. I watched a few games, and there's some of those hits that are, like, on both sides. They're borderline, and I don't think they would go nowadays, right? So it's like it was an intense series. There's a lot going on both sides. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that I guess they could say the same thing, but there's a lot of things that they did that, you know, got us fired up even more and kind of woke us up, if you will. But I think the final straw was probably Horty, right? That hit. We really rallied behind it, and I remember a few guys on the bench after that happened. You know, they kind of like pretty much said like they poked a bear, and you know, let's get at it. So it was an amazing series. I still have goosebumps just thinking about it, and there's too much to really kind of talk about, but those moments were things that really made a difference. You know, it's you know, when you look back, it's like, you know, unfortunately, it's one of those things that you kind of rally behind, and especially when your brother goes down like that, and after that we kind of took over, and it was still a hard series, and I can't say that we dominated, but those games at home kind of propelled us to have a lot more confidence.
When I picture our team, like, we ran off like emotions and like physicality and like let's make it personal. Like, we thrived in that kind of environment. And I just picture, like, I don't know, this is how my head works, but like I picture like Claude as the head coach. He's like standing by a bonfire and like every once in a while throws a little gasoline on it. But like you can't throw too much, you know, because then it gets dangerous. But like just enough. Like, is that kind of how you felt? Like, you know, you just like, yeah, feed it a little bit, but just enough. But like at times, like, you obviously don't want to get too much of that because you can get out of control, right, and lose the script. But like, but we thrived under that kind of fire, right?
Yeah, we did, and you're absolutely right. Like, for me, it was important not to get too high in that series as well, but at the same time, just enough to give you guys something to thrive on, obviously. And I remember, like, first two games we lost in Vancouver. The first game, I think there was about 15 or 17 seconds left when they scored the winner. The second one was in overtime. So we were right in the series, and we'd been down 2-0 before because we had lost to Montreal, or lost the first two games to Montreal at home. So it's not like we were in uncharted territories, right? So we came back home, and as you know, we after that Horty hit, we just took over, and they weren't even close games.
Yeah, I scored the first goal.
Yeah. And kept your finger to yourself.
I was going to mention that. I had it written down right here. Yeah. Fair, oh, big too. Goal in
That's
game
awesome.
Three.
Nice.
Yeah. And his gloves weren't new, so his fingers were bending. Yes.
Broken
yes.
It was a good fist bump, though. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We only have a few minutes left, unfortunately, so I want to get to game seven. Jeff Ward made a big speech, assistant coach, before. I have the quote. One of the things he said, "Win together today and we walk together forever." How did that resonate with you right before game seven of a Stanley Cup final and the emotion that you guys needed?
Yeah, no, I think that spoke to a lot of us. You know, it's and he also mentioned about, you know, it was basically a letter to his son, which, you know, kind of got us right away and got our attention. And he was saying basically that to listen to your inside voice and to your inner voice about, you know, pursuing your dreams. He's telling his son to really go for your dreams and go for what you're fighting for and what you believe in. And to me, the way
it spoke to me was basically my childhood. That's all I really wanted was to, yes, play in the NHL, but ultimately winning the Stanley Cup. So, yeah, I mean, if you need any more emotions or, you know, anything to get you going, that was it. So, yeah, I think that, you know, that whole day and a half, I should say, you know, we flew in, and we didn't have 2 days, right? We flew in, and now they have 2 days if it's like a long travel. Back then, we would travel, and then the next day would be the game. So we traveled all the way across the country, basically. And then for games one and two and game five, we didn't practice the day before. And for game seven, we talked to Claude, and he was like, what do you think if we go on the ice? And we thought it was a great idea just to take the nerves out and just to really get your mind off of everything that's going on in your brain. So, and then me and Fair went for a nice walk that night. I don't know if you remember that, but I do.
Oh, I remember.
And yeah, and which was where the hotel was on the water, but like there's a little park close by, so we got away from the city. We were able to kind of like walk and be in our thoughts and just talk about life. And you know, it was nice to get away from everything that was going on inside my brain, anyways. You know, the stress and the nervousness and not knowing what's going to happen and hoping for the best and whatnot. So it was nice to kind of get away from that, and then. Game day was just, you know, it was an early game, so that was nice to actually get this thing going and get on the ice. But that speech was obviously the last thing that I needed, and I think we all needed to really believe it all out there. Really, it was inspiring and gave us the energy we needed.
I have a funny story about the speech.
I'm sure you do.
I feel like such an idiot because he came in, he's like reading this letter, so nice, like from his son, like or basically to his son. And it was really thoughtful and nice. And like, I think about 5 minutes before that, I gave some like crude analogy of like taking a date to prom that you've like, do you remember this speech? Anyways, about like having a crush on someone for like high school and then you finally get them to prom, and it's about having confidence, and like, it was just so stupid. And then he comes in and he like gives this really thoughtful speech, and I was just like, all right. Know my role. Yeah.
Hey, it's
go penalty kill or something.
It all seemed to work.
Yeah.
Bergie goes out and scores 2 goals. Marshy gets 2 goals. He puts the empty netter in. You guys win the Stanley Cup. And then I was looking at photos the other day, and you were the last guy off the bench. What was going on there? Oh, when you guys won the Stanley Cup.
No.
Did you forget you had to go rush your teammates? Or
no,
what?
I lost the Stanley Cup in Game 7 when I played for Calgary. And so we played Tampa Bay, Game 7 in Tampa. We lost Game 7. So I was on the other side of the coin, and I was like, it was terrible. Like, terrible, terrible, terrible. And it, like, haunted me, like, for... until we won. And so I had, like, no shortage of time to think about, like what I would have done, what I missed out on, like how close I was, like all these things, right? And so for me, like I think even when I watch people win, like in the Olympics or like now when they win the cup, like I get so teary-eyed, like I'm like, oh, like it really hits me in the feels. And that does something to me. Like, and so I think I had so much time to think about it that I was like, okay, like the clock's ticking down. We're definitely going to win. I have 2 minutes. We're doing the whole thing. I'm thinking about how wonderful it is. I'm just looking around. I'm looking at my teammates to see what their emotions are like, because I get a lot out of that, like seeing other people. And then I wanted to see the thing, like the chaos and like rushing the goalie. And then like Doug Huda was our coach. And so like I wanted to like give him a hug and be like, oh my God, we did it. And then by that time, everybody was gone. And so so I like really soaked it up. It was awesome because we got the empty netter, so we could actually like enjoy it for a little bit, and then like, yeah, I really took it in, and like I don't regret a thing. It was awesome. So yeah,
we have like 2 minutes left, but I want to finish with this, the jacket, which everybody remembers. The real jacket is now at Heritage Hall, so if you want to go visit it, you can now at TD Garden, but we have a replica here, so I want you to sort of hold it and remember sort of how that all started and what that meant to you guys to get the jacket after every game.
Do you want to hold it up? So that is pretty, that's pretty sharp. That looks better than the real jacket. So we like, yeah, like, I mean, we just like to do fun things, right? And like, you know, player of the game is kind of a thing that not every team did back then, but like we kind of had fun with it, and it was like a nice way to acknowledge somebody, like to Claude's point earlier of like, maybe it was the penalty kill, maybe it was the fourth line, maybe it was just somebody that like contributed, right? Or did something impactful. So we you know, obviously made it a bit of a thing, and I found it on eBay. I like vintage Bruins, like I don't know, like there's all kinds of stuff. I have a whole backpack of things. Like, I like a
and the shirt, yeah,
in my
the
shirt. Best sports team ever. That was from a party that the Harvard Lampoon threw for us. That was fun. But the jacket was really, yeah, it was special. And it was like off eBay. It was cool. It was like funny. Guys go out and do the interview and stuff like that. And it was a real honor to, I think, just be recognized. And it wasn't like we had, like everybody gets a ribbon. You know, like it was earned. And guys really did earn it. And when you wore it out there for the media, like it really meant something. So who won it for the last game? Recky, I think.
Rex.
Yeah. So Rex, obviously, like, I mean, talk about going out on top. Like, he called his shot and like won the cup and retired and got the jacket and gave it back for the Hall of Fame. The Hall of
Heritage Hall.
Heritage Hall. Sponsored by.
Inside TD Garden.
I'm just kidding.
Inside TD Garden.
I work for the NHL now, so I know marketing.
You give the finger to the NHL, they hire you. There you go.
We could sell it. It was special. It was obviously something that meant a lot to us, and I think that it's nice. It's obviously got a home now, and a lot of pretty special players wore that thing. But this is cool. I like it. That's a really good job.
Love it.
Can I try
it
on
tomorrow night? Maybe. Yeah. Put it on.
Can I wear it tomorrow night?
Sure. Why not?
I didn't know what the dress code was. All right.
See if it fits.
What size are you? I've been working out.
Looks like a medium.
Oh, nice.
Very nice. Perfect.
Got an inside pocket.
Well, I think that's a good place to finish it off. Andrew Ferentz, Claude Julien, Patrice Bergeron, 2011 Stanley Cup champions. Thanks for joining us on Cue the Memories, presented by Coors Banquet.